We can leave the temple front lights off, please.
Yeah.
Good. And I'll just gently request that you make the meditation part of the program. I understand sometimes you come late, but the meditation is quite important, as I said, so please try to be on time for the meditation.
Okay, we'll begin with our prayer.
Join me, please. Om Purnamadah Purnamidam Purnat Purnamudachyate Purnasya Purnamadaya Purnameva Vishishyate Om Shanti Shanti Shantihi.
Om.
Good. You remember from last class? Om Shanti Shanti Shantihi is the correct swara for this Purnamadah mantra. And Purnamadah mantra is the traditional opening mantra for the study of the Brihadaranyaka Upanishad. Welcome back. We'll continue our study. We're beginning with the Maitreyi Brahmana. The chapters or sections of the this Upanishad are referred to as Brahmana. Maitreyi is the name of this Brahmana. It's the name of the name of Yajnavalkya's wife, as you remember from our first session. It happens to be in the second chapter, and it's the fourth Brahmana. So sometimes you see it numbered 2.4, but it's easier. Who remembers all these numbers? So generally we know this not as 2.4. We know this as the Maitreyi Brahmana. Just a few more comments of introduction. We gave a nice introduction to the text in the last class. Somebody asked me after the class if there is a recommended text to go along with this. For the last year, we had a recommended text. This year, there's really no necessity because we're making the effort to incorporate the translation on the slides. You can print out the slides from our website if you choose to do so. And the translation is a translation of Swami Madhavananda of the Ramakrishna Mission. If you want to get the book, you can do so. To prepare for this class, I think the most two things I would suggest to prepare for this class. One is to meditate every day. I would consider that the most important kind of preparation for this class because it helps give you the right orientation so that these teachings are not mere mystical statements, so that these teachings actually go in and help to bring about a transformation. The other thing you might consider doing is before coming to class, look over what we discussed in the prior class and look at the coming mantras of what we'll be seeing in the next class. I think that's very helpful so that when you sit down in this class, you have a overall orientation. My introductions, I try to keep them fairly brief, so it's helpful if you're a little bit oriented before you come to class. Okay. So in our prior class, we saw just the very opening sections where the rishi, Yajnavalkya, addresses his wife, Maitreyi, and he says, in American English, see ya. he doesn't say that, of course. He says, I'm going to leave, meaning I'm going to take to a life of sannyasa. He's going to renounce worldly activities. Yajnavalkya is a very famous sage, rishi. Most of the sages were householders. They were married. Yajnavalkya had two wives and many cows. That's how you support yourself, with your cows. Cows were wealth in those days. So He had a home, he had all of that, and he was about to renounce it. And he actually asked his wife, Maitreyi, for permission. Very important. So he asked for permission. I'll just refresh your memory. In our prior class, we talked about three kinds of sannyasa. So here, Yajnavalkya is taking sannyasa. What kind of sannyasa? And we can distinguish sannyasa as we did. Sannyasa means renunciation. In the prior class, we talked about three kinds of sannyasa. The most common kind, most familiar kind, we would call vividisha sannyasa. I'm not going to write the terms on the board because I did so in our prior class. Vividisha sannyasa is a sannyasa one undertakes for the sake of knowing. Vividisha literally means desire to know. Vividisha, desire to know. So one who takes sannyasa for freedom from worldly responsibilities, so he or she can dedicate themselves full time to spiritual pursuit, that's called Vividisha sannyasa. That's not the kind of sannyasa Yajnavalkya took, because he's already enlightened. He's already enlightened. Being enlightened, he could continue with his worldly activities, but he need not continue with his worldly activities. Most people are compelled to continue with their worldly activities, compelled by their desires, right? Kind of nice to have a house and a family and a car and all this nice stuff. So most people are compelled to continue living a worldly life by their ordinary desires. Yajnavalkya, being enlightened, no longer has these worldly desires. If he chose to, he could continue living with Maitreyi and his other wife. But there's no compelling reason for him to do so. So he decided to leave. To renounce the world when you're enlightened is called vidvat sannyasa. We introduced that term in the last class. Vividisha sannyasa is sannyasa with a desire for enlightenment. Vidvat sannyasa is a sannyasa of one who's already enlightened. And then we talked about a third kind of sannyasa. These two are discussed by Shankara in his commentary. A third kind we can include, which we called very simply tyaga. Tyaga also means renunciation. It's not such a big word. Kind of has a more simple meaning, so still means renunciation. And we said that tyaga represents just the attitude of sannyasa, not necessarily a change of lifestyle. So vividisha sannyasa and vidvat sannyasa most certainly refer to a change of lifestyle. It's the lifestyle in which one becomes a Hindu monk, a sannyasi, as opposed to tyaga, an attitude of sannyasa. And we said that attitude, and we had a lengthy discussion in the last class, so I'll just summarize it very briefly. It is a recognition that what can be accomplished through worldly means is limited. What can be accomplished through spiritual means is unlimited. We'll talk more about this today. So therefore, to turn your attention as much as possible away from worldly activities, to dedicate your efforts as much as possible towards spiritual growth, this would be the third kind of sannyasa, tyaga. If you're interested in this subject matter, chapter 5 of the Bhagavad Gita talks about sannyasa. In fact, chapter 5 is called Sannyasa Yoga. And in chapter 5, you'll see discussion of no fewer than 5 different kinds of sannyasa. So if you want to understand that, you can study chapter 5. You might find it helpful to listen to my lectures on chapter 5, which are online, if this particular topic is of compelling interest to you. Now, let's just pick up the thread here. So the opening mantra, remember, we don't call them verses. We don't call them verses for several reasons. One is they're not metrical. If they're not metrical, we can't call them a verse. Secondly, if it comes from an Upanishad, Upanishad is part of the Vedas, so therefore we talk of Veda mantras, not Veda verses. You don't talk about the shlokas. Shloka is a common word for Veda, for a verse. So you don't talk about the shlokas of the Vedas, you talk of the mantras of the Vedas. So therefore, Upanishad, being part of the Veda, we refer to each line as a mantra. So in the first mantra, we saw in a prior class, Yajnavalkya addresses his wife Maitreyi, says, I'm going to, what did it say? See ya. I'm going to renounce this life. Let me settle between you and Katyayani, his second wife, which, as we observed, is really taking permission from Maitreyi. And then Maitreyi is rather astute. She said, you know, the settlement, you remember the context. Settlement means she's going to get, presumably, half of Yajnavalkya's wealth, which means half of his cows. Not bad. So she's thinking, though, will those cows lead me to immortality? She uses the term amrita. And I want to come back to that term, amrita, to make sure we understand. There are two ways of understanding. Amrita literally means immortality. And she asks, will I become immortal through these cows? What? How will cows make you immortal? Well, wait a minute. Maitreyi is not dumb. She must have some reason for thinking cows will make her immortal. Remember, we discussed this in the last class. We said that if you do a sufficient number of very powerful rituals, the punya karma, the good karma reaped through those rituals, presumably could take you to heaven. Those rituals are costly. You have to hire many priests. You have to purchase many expensive things which are used in the rituals. You have to make many gifts to the priests. So many cows are required for that. So she's thinking, will this accumulated wealth that I receive from my departing husband, will that allow me to perform these rituals in such a way that I can make it to heaven? So Maitreyi is thinking that going to heaven is a condition of immortality. Yajnavalkya knows otherwise. Yajnavalkya knows that going to heaven is not a condition of immortality. We discussed in the prior class that unlike the biblical concept of heaven and hell being eternal, the Hindu concept of heaven and hell is not eternal. Based on an accumulation of good karma, you get a life in heaven. Once that good karma is exhausted, your time in heaven is over. You take another birth. In the same way, due to an accumulation of papa karma, sin, you're condemned to a lifetime in hell, but it's one lifetime in hell. And that lifetime eventually comes to an end, and you take another life. And it makes sense. For finite good or bad deeds, you should have a finite result. Therefore, heaven and hell are finite. Maitreyi might have some confusion about this. She uses the word amrita, but Yajnavalkya has no confusion. He knows that heaven is a finite goal. He also knows, and this I kind of hinted at this, the word amrita is also kind of a code word, as it were. It suggests something else. And what Maitreyi truly seeks is what each and every one of us seek. It's what all human beings seek, and that is everyone seeks a life of perfect contentment, joy, peace, happiness, fulfillment, love. Fill in the blank with whatever word you want. But as long as you include the word continual or perfect, you know, we all have happiness in life, but what we seek is perfect happiness, unbroken happiness, uninterrupted happiness. And as we discussed in the last class, that condition of perfection, Perfect peace, perfect contentment, perfect happiness is not possible through any worldly means. We'll come back to that in just a moment. That is suggested by the word amrita. So Maitreyi has in her mind perhaps going to heaven for all time. Yajnavalkya is thinking that's really not what you want. What you really want is this perfect contentment. We have another word for that. We call it moksha. Moksha, liberation. Liberation from what? Liberation from suffering. Liberation from suffering in this life and liberation from suffering after this life. That's moksha. So, she asks, with all of your cows, can I do enough rituals to make it to heaven? And Yajnavalkya said, no. The best you can do with all those cows is live a comfortable life. You can do a lot of rituals, and you might or might not make it to heaven, but definitely with the wealth I leave you, you can live a comfortable life. And he says, amritatvasya tu na asha asti vittena iti. He says, and we ended our class with that last part, vittena, by means of wealth, na asha asti, there is no hope, amritatvasya, of gaining immortality. With wealth, there is no hope of gaining immortality. Why? Wealth is always limited. The word immortality suggests a limitless result. How can limited wealth create limitless result in this world or the next? And we said, if you won that $200 million lottery, would you have a perfect life? You wouldn't have a perfect life. And if you could use those $200 million to do a lot of rituals, would you be in heaven for all eternity after this life? No. So that's what Yajnavalkya says. There's no hope through wealth. And that leads us into the next mantra where Maitreyi replies. And I'll continue to break each of the words. When we break the words, the spelling and pronunciation changes. So just repeat as I chant. Saha uvacha Maitreyi. Saha uvacha Maitreyi. Yena aham na amritasyam. Yena aham na amritasyam. Kimaham tena kuryam. Kimaham tena kur. Yat eva Bhagavan Veda. Yat eva Bhagavan Veda. Tat eva me bruhi iti, tat eva me bruhi iti. Sa, she, Maitreyi, ha, at that time, uvacha, she said, Maitreyi said. What did she say? Yena aham na amritasyam, yena, that by which, that wealth. Yena is a pronoun. That wealth by which na amrita aham I, na amrita syam, na syam, I would not be, I would not gain amrita, immortality. That wealth by which I would not gain immortality, referring to that wealth, the cows that Yajnavalkya would leave her, she says, Kimaham tena kuryam. Nice Sanskrit idiom. Aham, I. Kim tena kuryam. What would I do with them? You tell me that those cows will not give me immortality, then a good translation of this idiom is, what good is it to me? Which means she doesn't want cows. She doesn't want a comfortable life, as Yajnavalkya said in a prior life. She wants immortality. She wants ultimately moksha. immortality is not going to be found in heaven, but what she wants is not a comfortable life here or thereafter. What she wants is immortality. What she wants is moksha. Cows, Yajnavalkya said, would not give her immortality. So she says, what good is your wealth to me? Kimaham tena kuryam, what would I do with those cows? Yat eva Bhagavan Veda, Bhagavan is her husband, addressed as Lord. Yat eva Bhagavan Veda, Bhagavan, you, O Master, Veda, whatever you know, yat Veda, that which you know, tat eva me bruhi, tat eva, that alone, me, unto me, bruhi, tell me, iti closes her statement, whatever you know, please tell me. Now there's more to that statement than you'd think. She's seeing her husband leave a comfortable life. He's got it made. She's there to cook for him, right? He's got the cows, he's got the house, he's got everything he wants, and he's walking away from it. She's thinking, how can he walk away from this? This is a perfect setup, a perfect life, yet he's walking away from it. He must know something. He must know of something better. And that is often the beginning of a spiritual pursuit, when you see someone else committed to that spiritual pursuit. When you see someone else who has renounced all other worldly activities for the sake of seeking moksha, it's like a signpost. What does that tell you? It tells you that maybe something more is available. I'll give you a concrete example. In 1981, I met my guru. I didn't know he was going to be my guru. I met Swami Dayananda in 1981. I had been studying Vedanta for a number of years. When I listened to him, even in the first day or two that I listened to him, I had a very strong feeling. What was the feeling? There's something he knows that I want to know, I need to know. He has discovered something, I must discover what he discovered. I had that feeling so strongly, just by seeing him, by hearing him, and this is the sense that Maitreyi had. Seeing her husband, who she has so much respect for, who is now turning his back on conventional life, leaving his comfortable life behind, and heading out, she has that same feeling, she has that same desire. Now, this statement of Maitreyi also indicates something further. Maitreyi is going to become, in the coming passages, Maitreyi is going to become the student, and Yajnavalkya is going to become the teacher. So currently they have a husband-wife relationship, but starting with the next verse, their relationship is going to take on a new dimension. Yajnavalkya becomes guru, and Maitreyi becomes shishya, student. For a guru to become a guru, there's certain requirements. We're not going to talk about them right now. Shrotriyam brahmanishtam, some of you remember this, that's not our interest right now. But to become a student, there are also certain requirements. So, does Maitreyi meet the minimum, when I say minimum standard requirements, I think of what you see in a box of food, the minimum daily requirements of different vitamins and minerals and all of this stuff. We're not talking about that. What are the minimum standards for a student, which means a student who is capable of understanding what is to be taught? The word we use for that is adhikari. Let's look at that. Adhikari means qualified student. And this verse is, this mantra, demonstrates adhikari tvam, demonstrates the status of qualification. So Maitreyi should be qualified. You should be qualified. What are those qualifications? Many of you have heard this very standard thing in Vedanta that we talk about so often, the sadhana chatushtayam, these four primary qualifications. This could be a topic for many classes. I'm going to assume most of you have seen this before. We're going to see it very briefly here, just with regard to Maitreyi. These are the requirements without which a student will never become enlightened. So these are the primary requirements then for the students. The first being viveka.
Write it properly.
Viveka we usually translate as discrimination. What kind of discrimination? Discrimination between that which is valuable and that which is not so valuable. She's already exercised her discrimination in recognizing that all this wealth, all of Yajnavalkya's cows, is not as valuable as what she really wants. Amrita, immortality, or better said, moksha. So she's already exercised some kind of viveka in discriminating the fact that the kind of contentment she seeks, that perfect, unbroken, uninterrupted contentment, can never be achieved through worldly means, no matter how much Yajnavalkya leaves behind. So therefore, she has exercised viveka. Next comes vairagya, dispassion. Dispassion means not clinging to all the things that we already acknowledge aren't going to make us perfectly content and give us uninterrupted happiness. She has recognized that Yajnavalkya is offering her all these cows. And she says, what will I do with all those cows? That's vairagya. That's like I don't want to use divorce is not a nice metaphor. A family member, a distant family member dies, and in the will leaves you $100,000. Cool. If it were Maitreyi, she would say, what will I do with $100,000? Will $100,000 guarantee me happiness, immortality, unbroken contentment, perfect peace? Can you buy that for $100,000? Can you buy that for $1,000,000? Can you buy that for $100,000,000? This is vairagya. Maitreyi has his vairagya. This next one I'm not going to describe in any detail, but a set of six traits which all indicate a kind of spiritual maturity. Includes shama, internal quietude, dhamma, self-control. Includes shraddha, faith. It includes samadhanam, meditation. I don't want to go through the details, but it means a person who has been engaged in spiritual practice and has attained a level of maturity as a result of that. Again, if we were to go through this in detail, it would take actually several classes. That's not our intent. All we want to do is demonstrate or show how this mantra is demonstrating Maitreyi to be adhikari. The final of these four traits that make you an adhikari is mumukshutvam. Mumukshutvam is a state of being a mumukshu. A mumukshu is someone who wants moksha, liberation. One who wants moksha, liberation, is a mumukshu. Mumukshutvam is the status of being that mumukshu, the state of desiring liberation. So, in this mantra, in the third mantra, Maitreyi demonstrates her adhikarityam, her state of being qualified. And one reason that that's included in this Upanishad is for those of us who come along several thousand years later reading this Upanishad, that we should recognize that in order for these teachings to go in, these qualifications are essential. These qualifications are not essential to attend this class. Anyone can attend the class. But you could attend, if you are lacking in these qualifications, attending the class will not result in gaining moksha. Basically, the teachings depend on this qualified student. If the student is not qualified, the teachings will not be fruitful, which makes perfect sense. Okay. Then. So, yateva bhagavan veda, tadeva me bruhi. O Yajnavalkya, whatever you know something. You know something. You know something very valuable. I want to know that. How does Yajnavalkya reply? Saha uvacha Yajnavalkyaha. Saha uvacha Yajnavalkyaha. Priyabhata are naha sati. Priyabhata are naha sati. Priyam bhashase. Priyam bhash. Ehi aswa. Ehi aswa. Vyakhyasyamite. Vyakhyasyamite. Vyachakshanasya tu me. Vyachakshanasya tu me. Niridhyasaswa yati. Niridhyasaswa yati. Saha ha uvacha Yajnavalkyaha. Saha Yajnavalkyaha. He, that Yajnavalkya, uvacha. He said ha at that time. What did he say to Maitreyi? He says, naha priya sati. Are, are, oh dear one. Bata, bata is untranslatable. You're like, oh. how would you, what English word you, oh. How to translate that? I have no idea. That's the sense of bata. So, are, oh dear one, naha, for, literally it's for us, but for me, priya sati, you have always been dear to me, priya. You are dear, you have always been dear to me. Oh dear one, you have always been loved by me. Priyam bhashase, notice bhashase, that A dropped due to these grammatical rules. Priyam bhasha say, what you say to me is also dear, dear to his heart. He's about to renounce the world, and she's talking kind of the same line, as we would say. She's already on board, so to speak. She's already thinking about renunciation. In fact, it looks like she wants to go with him. He's renouncing the world, and she's ready to renounce the world and go with him. I don't know if that works logistically. You can't really renounce the world and take your wife with you. But that's a detail. What she says to him, what good is all your wealth? That's very pleasing to Yajnavalkya, who's enlightened and who recognizes the limitations of wealth. So Priyam Bhasha say, what you say is very dear to me. So he says, Ehi, come here. Ehi. Ao. Ao by toe. Aswa literally means be seated. So Ehi, come. Aswa, be seated. Ao baito, as many of you would say. And he continues, vyakhyasyami. I will, it's a future tense verb, I will tell te, you. I will tell you. Prior verse, she says, you know something, tell me. Tell me what you know. He says, vyakhyasyami te. I will tell you. Come, be seated, and I will tell you what I know. A condition. We talked about being adhikari in a prior mantra, so this comes up again here. Vyachakshanasya tu me. Me vyachakshanasya. Whatever I'm telling you, me, of me, whatever I'm telling you, whatever I'm instructing you about, nididhyasaswa, reflect on it. Many of you are familiar with the word nididhyasana, so here's the verb from verb form of that. Nididhyasaswa, and it's a command. Think about what I'm about to say. Reflect upon what I'm about to say. Meditate upon what I'm about to say. It's different than saying pay attention. Pay attention is you're paying attention right now. This is paying attention. But he's not saying pay attention. He's saying reflect on what I'm about to tell you, because paying attention is not enough. And that, by the way, that applies to this class as well. Paying attention is not enough. Of course, not paying attention or going to sleep is not going to do you any good. But even paying attention is not enough, because all of these teachings are meant to contribute to a personal process of self-inquiry. More than anything else, Vedanta is that process of self-inquiry. We use the term atma vichara. Vichara, inquiry into the nature of atma, self, atma vichara. Vedanta is more than atma vichara, but atma vichara is absolutely central to the teachings of Vedanta. Atma vichara is not listening to what Swamiji says. Atma vichara means using these teachings to guide your own personal process of self-inquiry. That's exactly what Yajnavalkya tells Maitreyi. Don't merely listen. Don't merely be attentive, but deeply reflect on what I'm about to say. Now, the teachings begin with the next verse. And before we move ahead, there's a very important Vedantic principle that we need to bring out here. She seeks immortality. She seeks perfect contentment, uninterrupted happiness. She seeks that. Moksha is a term that we use for it, a condition of perfection. How will one achieve a condition of perfection in life? We need to talk about this before moving on. When we say condition of perfection, we talked about this also in the last class. The kind of happiness, contentment, and peace we seek is not limited, but boundless. And remember the example I gave you. Would you be happy, would you be okay, if I gave you that pill, taking which you'd be happy 99% of the time? Do you remember that example? And the odd thing is that we want contentment, peace, 100% of the time. And that is not humanly possible. How is it possible? Given the nature of our lives, is it possible to have a perfect life? How ridiculous is that? Is it possible to have a perfect body? Is it possible to have a perfect mind? The only way you will have perfect peace is if you have a perfect body, a perfect mind, and a perfect life. When will you pull that off? Right. Okay. This is where Vedanta begins, is with the recognition of the limitations of what can be accomplished through worldly efforts And this topic was so important, I'd like to see, have you see it in a little bit more detail. What is it that we can accomplish with our worldly efforts? There are four different things that can be accomplished through worldly efforts. I don't know that we've seen this in our Tuesday night classes, maybe long ago, but if it was long ago, you may have forgotten it. So let us see this very important topic. Whether you call the goal Amrita, immortality, or whether you call the goal moksha, it is a result. It is something you accomplish. A result in Sanskrit we call phala. Literally means fruit, means result. So there are, according to, this is a very traditional analysis, there are four different kinds of phala, four different kinds of results. There are some results that are utpattihi. Utpatti, we'll translate it as creation. Kriya utpattiya, creation. Or origination. Something which is created, a result which is created, is utpatti. A tree comes from a seed. Utpatti. That's an example. So that's one kind of result, is the creation of something. But the overall topic is, how do we get moksha? Can we create moksha? We'll answer that question after we see all four. The second, apti, is acquisition. Can we gain moksha? Can we buy it, so to speak? Acquisitions, we often think in terms of purchasing. So can we get it through acquisition, apti? Or vikriti. Vikriti means transformation. Can we transform ourselves into that condition of being absolutely free and complete? And the fourth possibility, we're going to come back and see each of these, but this is just to put them on the board. And the fourth possibility is samskriti. Sounds like the language. Samskritam means refined. Samskriti is refinement. A better translation would be refinement in the sense of purification. I think that would be the best translation. Purification? Sure. Either way, refinement or purification. So let's examine, how can we accomplish moksha, bearing in mind that moksha is a phala, a result, unlike any kind of other result in the world. And what makes it different, as we said, it's a condition, it's an absolute condition, a condition of perfection. Not just happy, perfect happiness. Not just contentment, uninterrupted contentment, etc. So let's see, how can we pull it off, as it were? Can we somehow cause this state of perfection, can we cause it to be created within us? Now here's the problem. Created from what? The tree is created from a seed. So from what would a state of perfection be created from? What is the seed from which a state of perfection can arise? If it's something worldly, like a seed, whatever would come from that worldly seed wouldn't be perfect, right? It would bear the limitations of the worldliness. Our bodies are a product of the world. Our minds are a product of the world. Our thoughts are products of this world. Products of this world meaning prakriti, nature. Bodies are nature. Minds are nature. Thoughts are nature. Nature has its limitations. Nature is what it is. Will this condition of perfection that we seek, we call moksha, can it be produced? Can it originate from the nature which is in the form of our bodies and minds? Whatever would originate from the natural body and mind would bear the limitations of nature. Bodies are mortal. Minds are transient. How can something which is unchanging, permanent, eternal, evolve from that which is impermanent, always changing, and mortal? So this first possibility of utpatti is rejected. Moksha cannot be the result of utpatti. Then, how about apti? Apti means acquisition. That's when you went to the store today to buy a gallon of milk or whatever it was. That is apti, gaining something. Whatever you don't have, you go out and get it. How would that apply to moksha? You go to the, what is the shop here, 7-Eleven? Instead of picking up a gallon of milk, do you have any moksha? By the way, the clerk there is probably of Indian origin and knows the word moksha. And you say, no, we don't have that here. How silly it would be. Not only that, but there's an underlying principle here is that to gain something, we're going to see this also in Vikriti, to gain something, you know, to buy a gallon of milk costs several dollars. So the several dollars represents effort to get the milk. Why? Because you had to work in order to earn the dollars in order to buy the milk. Any acquisition requires effort. Either effort to actually get it, you know, for example, to travel to the ashram, it takes some effort to get here, or to get the gallon of milk, it takes effort to earn the money to buy the milk. There's always effort, and the effort is always proportional to what you're acquiring. For a gallon of milk, it doesn't take a very big effort. To come here to the ashram doesn't take a very big effort. Other endeavors in life require a much bigger effort. To get a college degree, bigger effort, right? To become a millionaire. To become a millionaire through your own, not by inheriting the money, but by becoming an entrepreneur. There you go. To be an entrepreneur. And to become, I guess to become a millionaire today is nothing. So we have to up the ante to break $10 million or $100 million. Takes a huge effort. How much effort would it take to acquire moksha? A goal that we define as being limitless. For a small goal, small effort. Medium goal, medium effort. Limitless goal, limitless effort. Meaning what? Moksha cannot be attained through apti. It's not an acquisition. Next possibility is vikriti. Vikriti means transformation. So can we transform ourselves from a condition of imperfection into a condition of perfection? And we talked about this also a little bit in our last class. We talked about how we can go to the gym every day and improve our bodies, but our bodies will never be perfect. We can pray and meditate to improve our minds, but our minds will never be perfect. Here we've got a problem And that is, if we're trying to take the imperfect and make it into, and gradually transform the imperfect into a process, into that which is perfect, is just not possible. I remember an example from, remember your high school chemistry class? Who remembers this nonsense? Anyway, I saw some of it, I do, I don't know why. But I remember learning that if you dissolve alcohol in water, and then you want to use this distillation to remove all the alcohol from the water, and you go run this water alcohol mixture through a distillation process. You run it through the distillation process, it removes, and I'm just making up a number, 99.5% of the alcohol is removed. Okay? But there's still some alcohol there. So then you run it through the distillation process again. What happens is, of the remaining alcohol, 99.5% of the remaining alcohol is removed, which means there's still a little trace there. So, okay, you take that alcohol and run it through the distillation process a third time. Every time you run it through the distillation process, you remove 99.5% of the alcohol, which means when will you have removed the last molecule of alcohol? Never. Never. And this, I'm sorry for the little bit of a technical metaphor, but I think it's a very apt metaphor to show that a condition of perfection can never be achieved through a process of transformation. The imperfect approaches perfection, but can never reach perfection. Okay, enough said. The last possibility for gaining moksha is samskriti, purification, refinement. We have to remove all of our impurities. When your last impurity is removed, you'll be perfect. We're back to exactly the same argument, right? So removing impurities is a gradual process. When will that gradual process of removing impurities result in the total absence of impurity? Never. We can also apply that other principle about amount of effort. To create something that is perfectly pure, how much effort? For something which is half pure, half effort. For something which is perfectly pure, limitless effort. Now we're stuck. How will we gain moksha? There are these only four possibilities. The great teachers who have gone before have analyzed the subject matter very carefully and have understood that any possible result will fall into one of these four categories. You can make up your own, but what they would say is it'll fall into one or the other of these categories. And if we now reject that moksha cannot possibly be attained through any one of these four categories, what are we saying? Moksha cannot be acquired as a phala, as a result. Moksha is... We can add one word. These are all pala, the result of what? Karma. Action, effort. These are the four kinds of karma pala. These are the four kinds of results that can be accomplished through action, through worldly effort, through any kind of effort, even through spiritual effort. To use the same logic, to reach the infinite, to reach the limitless, how many Vedanta classes should you attend? We can use the same logic. So if every class you come to, you get a little bit more enlightened. Don't take this seriously. It's just to give you a hint. If every class you take a little step towards being enlightened, another class, another little step, another class, another little step, through all of these steps, attending how many hundreds or thousands of classes, when will you achieve that which is limitless? When will you reach there? When will you get there? You can't, the American expression, you can't get there from here. Meaning, you cannot gain moksha through any kind of karma. Moksha is not karma phala. Period. Moksha is not a result of your efforts. Then what? Well, either we can end a class here and tell you you can all go home. Moksha is not possible, so you can maybe, you know, hope or pray one day God will give you moksha, whatever. Or there's another possibility. And this was one of the most stunning revelations of the ancient rishis, who taught, you already possess what you want to possess. You already are what you want to become, but you don't know it. Which is this, in more Vedantic language, your true nature, the consciousness behind your thoughts, which we call Satchidananda Atma, is already perfect, already limitless, already full and complete, already in a state of perfect uninterrupted contentment. We're talking about your consciousness. I know this may not be, if you're hearing this for the first time, it won't be comprehensible. It will become comprehensible as we proceed. But this is what the ancient rishis taught, and that is your true nature is already full and complete. You already are what you want to become. You already have what you want to possess. What is the problem then? The problem is ignorance. To use, my guru likes an expression, very meaningful expression, self non-recognition. Ignorance of your true self, self non-recognition. Due to your failure to recognize the truth of who you are, you assume that you have to buy some moksha someplace. You have to do some kind of utpatti or apti or vikriti or samskriti. You have to do something. You have to do something for the sake of moksha. But moksha is not karmapala. Moksha is jnanapala, the result of knowledge. Why? When self non-recognition is removed, what's left? You are. You, in your true nature. You, the one who's full and complete and limitless and perfect. That's the one that's left. I don't want to tell you the tenth man story. You've all heard this tenth man story, but that story describes it perfectly. Failure to recognize oneself as that which you're looking for. The simple example that everyone likes to give is running around your house looking for your glasses. Why run around looking for your glasses? Because you don't know. You already have the glasses, you already possess that which you're looking for. So what kind of karma will it take to produce the glasses? For me to get the glasses is not karmapala. Can I create the glasses? Can I go to the store and get these glasses? Not any glasses, but my glasses. Where will I go for my glasses? Can I transform? Well, it doesn't make any sense. Or purify doesn't make any sense. So clearly, for me To have my glasses is not karma phala. It is, however, jnana phala. This is Vedanta. Vedanta is a method of self-inquiry through which you are led to discover your true nature, which has always been full and complete. Sri Shankaracharya is fond of a particular expression, Nitya Shuddha Buddha Mukta Swabhavaha Atma. He says that your true nature is Nitya Shuddha, eternally pure, Nitya Buddha, eternally enlightened, Nitya Mukta, eternally liberated. That's who you are. It's an already existent fact. Then why are we meeting here on Tuesday nights? If it's an all, this is Vedanta, seeking an already existent truth. The fact of your being full and complete, liberated, infinite, vast, whatever adjective you want to use, that's an already existent fact, then what are we doing here on Tuesday nights? Trying to remove ignorance about that truth. It's an already existent truth about which there's a lot of ignorance. The purpose of his teachings then is to remove that ignorance. Okay, I know that was a little bit elaborate, but it is absolutely vital to make sense of what is about to come. We'll just see, we'll just begin with the next mantra, and then we'll proceed in the next class. So, Yajnavalkya ended in the prior verse, prior mantra, by saying, I'm going to tell you what you asked about. Please listen and reflect on what I say. And what did he say? Saha ha uvacha, saha ha uvacha, navai are patyuhu kamaya, navai hare patyuhu kamaya, patihi priyaha bhavati, patihi priyaha bhavati. Atmanah tu kamaya, atmanah tu kamaya, patihi priyaha bhavati, patihi priyaha bhavati. So, this is famous. This is quoted so often. I mentioned in the introduction that the Brihadaranyaka Upanishad, in general, I think is perhaps the most widely quoted Upanishad. And of the mantras in the Upanishad, this is one of the mantras that's most widely quoted in this particular Upanishad. Saha, he, meaning Yajnavalkya, ha, at that time, uvacha, he said. What did he say to Maitreya? Are, O dear one, navai patyuhu kamaya patihi priyaha bhavati. Patihi priyaha bhavati. Patihi, husband. Priyaha, loved, bhavati, is. Patihi priyaha bhavati. The husband is loved. Husband is loved. So who is he? He's talking about himself, right? He's talking to his wife. So the patihi priyaha bhavati. The husband is loved. Na patyuhu kamaya, na kamaya, not for the sake, patyuhu, of the husband. The husband is loved, not for the sake of the husband. Na patyuhu kamaya, kamaya, for the sake of, prayojanaya, Shankara says. Vai, Shankara says, Prasiddha smaranartham. This is to make us reflect on. This is a well-known truth. Vai. This is a well-known truth. What is a well-known truth? that the husband is not loved for the sake of the husband, then what? Atmanaha tu, but on the other hand, atmanaha kamaya, for the sake of oneself, patihi priyaha bhavati, the husband is loved. I'll give you the whole thing. The husband is loved not for the sake of the husband. The husband is loved for one's own sake. Now, that language can be a little obscure. I'm going to tell you very briefly what it means today, and then next time we meet, this is our focus. Very, very important teaching. We're talking about the source of happiness. So generally, we think of the people and things in our life as being the source of happiness. So if the husband is a source of happiness, the husband is loved. But is the husband the source of happiness, or is it that you become happy in the presence of the husband? And I know it's not always true, by the way. We all know that's true, but this is a best case scenario. So apparently Yajnavalkya and Maitreya are getting along very nicely. There are no problems. So we presume that Yajnavalkya is indeed loved by Maitreya. But is it that Yajnavalkya, as an individual person, is himself the source of love, or is it that Maitreya experiences love in the presence of her husband? Right? I mean, when you... I don't want to drag... I'd not drag you through. There are some texts that are really over the top. And they say, if you love, and by the way, these are texts written by male sannyasis for other male sannyasis, just so you get the context. And these texts will go on verse after verse after verse, talking about how can you possibly love a woman? And they'll use terms like a fleshy bag of excrement. Use this ridiculous language. And it goes on and on and on and on. And that's just one verse. So go on verse after verse after verse after verse, talking about what is there to love, and you know how peculiar it is and how disgusting it is and all, how icky, that's the technical word, how icky it is to love a physical body. But it's not the physical body that you love, right? What is the source? We'll just end with this little closing part. When you love a person, specifically, what is it that you love? Certainly, it's not the physical. You may find a body attractive. Wait 10 years. Anyway, the body is sometimes attractive, or at 5 o'clock in the morning. Who is attractive at 5 o'clock in the morning? We understand this. It's not the physical body that's a source of love. Then what? You're in love with somebody's mind? No. Personality. Closer, except sometimes that personality is not so pleasant to be with. What exactly is it that is the source of love? And what we'll discuss in the next class is that in the presence of that special person, something changes in you. And that change in you allows the love that's already present in your own heart, it allows that love to come out. In the presence of the special person, you feel love and wrongly assume that the person is the source of that love. In fact, that love comes from your own heart. And that's what Yajnavalkya begins to tell Maitreyi here. He says, Patyuhuka na vai are patyuhuka maya. It is not for the sake of the husband that patihi priyaha bhavati, that the husband is loved. It's not that the husband is the source of love, but atmanaha tu kamaya, for the sake of one's own self, that the patihi priyaha bhavati, that the husband is loved. We have much more to say, and we'll see this in our next class. And we'll conclude with our prayers.